Welcome to SISLCast. My name is Ben Richardson, and I'm a PhD student in the School of Information Science and Learning Technologies at the University of Missouri. And on behalf of the University of Missouri's ACES chapter and the Mizzou Advantage Opportunistic Discovery of Information Research Group, it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Karen E. Fisher of the Washington Information School. So hello, Karen, and thank you for agreeing to do this CISL podcast today. If you would, for our audience, could you just introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Karen Fisher. I'm a professor at the Information School at the University of Washington in beautiful Seattle. And I'm really excited to be here today. I'm originally from St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. And if you're not familiar with that is, when you're looking at your map here in Missouri, you want to look, cast your eyes to the right, way out to the right. Keep looking, keep looking, keep looking, and you'll see that there's an island. It's a rock. It's also known as the Rock. And it's Newfoundland, and it was settled about 500 years ago, and it's in, it's, I guess, a 2.5 hour time difference from here. And that's where I'm from. I didn't join Canada until 1949, believe it or not. It's the last province to join Canada.
And could you guys give us just a brief background of your academic background?
Academic background. Well, as I mentioned, Newfoundland. I did my undergraduate there. We just have one university. It's kind of where everybody goes. I did an undergraduate degree in English and Russian. And loved reading. But I was also kind of a closet sociologist. Even as an undergraduate, I was very fascinated with human behavior and how we learn things, how people get about in society. Couldn't help it as a Newfoundlander. And decided I wanted to go to library school. That's kind of what we called it back in those days. In Canada, we don't have nearly as many LIS schools as there are in the U.S. Believe it or not, there's only, at that time, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was only about 6 or 7 schools. And there's only 2 schools at the time that really offered a doctorate in information science. So I went to the University of Western Ontario. I understand it just changed its name. So I did an MLIS there, and I worked for a couple of years at an information and referral center. And after I did that, and that kind of reflected my interest in people in everyday life, I went back and did a PhD with Patricia Dewdney, Wilma Harris, and Catherine Ross, who are world-renowned for their work in people in everyday life. So I did a PhD in the area, and after that I went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, which is how I made my foray down here south of the border. And from there I went to the University of Washington, where I was an assistant professor, and I was promoted to associate and then full professor several years ago.
Okay, so in the world of information science, you're very well known for Information Grounds. Could you just give our audience a brief description of Information Grounds?
Sure. So Information Grounds are basically is the places where you go to hang out. Not even necessarily hang out, which is the places where you find yourself for one reason or another. You're there for an instrumental purpose, such as to get a haircut. Maybe you're there waiting for the doctor. Maybe you get a tattoo. Maybe it's the dog park. Maybe you're there dancing, or you're there waiting to pick up your luggage. But because you're there and other people are there, Ben, I can see the wheels turning. I'm sure you can think of several places like that for yourself. But because you're there and other people there, voila, you start creating and sharing information with other people. And that information, you'll probably pass it on with other people, and you'll use it in many alternative ways.
Could you describe some of the current research you're doing into Information Grounds, sort of like what grounds you are examining at the moment?
Yeah. So Information Grounds, they're there all the time, and you cannot help but study them. They're there. So I have a research team back at the University of Washington, and they're studying all different kinds of them, and I have colleagues around the world who are studying them as well. The research that I'm currently studying at, have to do with kids from the Horn of Africa, kids from Somalia. And the kids, they lived out in South Seattle, and I've been working with those kids about the different information grounds that they have. But there's another framework that I've developed that I'm also interested in with regard to the kids, and I call them lay information technical mediaries. And this has to do with some other work that I've been conducting the past few years. And lay information technical mediaries, there are people who are really, really, really skilled at surfacing the information needs of other people, understanding what other people might need. And then they're also really adept at picking up that information and passing it on to others, and they may or may not engage in follow-up. So it's not just passing on information, that they also get themselves involved with providing technical assistance to other people.
So are those lay people, do they have like an information grounds, or is this just a phenomenon that you're exploring? So trying to understand how people can aid others that don't have perhaps as much information literacy?
Bingo, yeah. So I call it social information literacy.
Okay.
That's what it's all got to do with. But a lot of these lay info technical mediaries, one of the things that makes them so good at what they do is that they have a lot of information grounds.
Okay. Right.
And some of the people that are what I find are more likely to be lay info technical mediaries happen to be kids, especially kids who speak languages other than English at home.
And so how are you kind of getting access to these individuals?
Yeah. Mostly through working with agencies that work with youth. So work with the Horn of Africa Services, as well as with YMCA, and then back in Seattle, I work with the Seattle Public Library, the King County Library System, and in particular, their branches that work in areas of the city where there's large ethnic minority populations.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But that's just some of it. I mean, I have my students, you know, they study information grounds all around the city and all across the country.
So it sounds like you have a lot of antennas out there trying to find more information grounds to explore.
Yep, always there. Why don't you tell me what one of your information grounds are?
Let's see. Unfortunately, as a PhD student, it seems like my information grounds are diminishing instead of expanding. But I think, for instance, I like to play frisbee golf, and I just show up by myself, and I end up hanging out with complete strangers for 1 to 2 hours, and conversations vary on anything. Mm-hmm. But it also allows me to sort of have a tie-in with the community, because, you know, I'm always surrounded by other doc students, and we always have these lofty ivory tower conversations. So it's just great to kind of hang out with, quote-unquote, Joe Sixpack, and just hang out and see what their concerns are. And I can also ask them questions about HIV, you know, not directly, but just kind of figure out where they're getting their information from. So it's mm-hmm. it's a good, I don't know if that's a proper example.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is an excellent example. Because if I'm with information grounds, they can bring together people, what we call the type of bonding social capital, people who already have a lot in common, who may know each other. But then there's also what we call talk about bridging social capital, people who don't know each other, don't have a lot of things already in common. So it's really great because you get to mix it up
right.
in a lot of different ways. One of my best information grounds, me personally, back in Seattle, would probably be my dance studio. I do Middle Eastern dance. And it's really cool because when I go there, women come from all over the city, and nobody asks about your day job.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows really what you do. So there's bus drivers, there's people in IT, there's people who cook, you know, there's all kinds of things. We're all shapes and sizes and colors and stuff. And the only thing we really have in common is that we happen to be female and that we all like to dance.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us, like me, very poorly, you know, but it's just fantastic. And we share all kinds of information, too.
Oh, that's great. I just got two kind of generalized questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
So any advice you could give to researchers, especially researchers that might want to have more of a qualitative methodology,
mm-hmm.
just kind of in broad strokes?
Yeah, a couple of things. First off, I would say follow your heart.
Okay.
Follow your heart. Do the research that keeps you awake at night. Follow the heart, the research that you're passionate about, because that's the topic that's going to sustain you.
Mm-hmm.
And then talk with people, hang out with people who are also passionate about their research and give you good insights about it. And then research, remember a couple of things here, that what goes up, no must come down type of thing. So when you're doing inductive research,
mm-hmm.
you don't have a framework, you're doing the work, and then after you get some more insights about it, then you can go in other directions with it. So you want to remember that. And that you want to go deep with it, but then you also want to go wide, also kind of following the same vein.
Okay, so follow your heart. And I can imagine you have to have a great passion because you're going to mm-hmm. be living with this creature that you're creating for months on end, so you must, in a sense, enjoy the presence of the creature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also that the research is something that, this is one of the things that Sandra and I've been talking about today, that it's something that's going to be with you for many, many years. So you do the dissertation, and it's more or less to demonstrate that you're proficient in doing research, and then you can move on, you'll get the job, and you're going to move on to doing other things. But chances are you're going to be coming back to it again, the same ideas. You'll pick them up, and they're going to become more sophisticated. They're going to grow into something much bigger. So then you're going to have a chance, even though it's qualitative, it might have been something small. Of course, you're going to end up with a mountain and a ton of data. But then you're going to start going broader with it. And you'll probably use other methods to test it out in other ways. and the ideas will become bigger. Maybe other people will want to try out what it is that you've been learning. You're going to develop propositions from the ideas that you have.
So in a sense, kind of create research that you can build upon in the future?
And what it will happen quite organically.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, you go deep, you're going to, now it's going to be inductive, so it's going to be from the ground up. That's what I'm saying, it's just going to go up high, and then what goes up must come down, because mm-hmm. then it's going to be deductive. And then you're going to dig deep with it, and then you're going to go broad with it, you're going to go wide in terms of doing more quantitative approaches probably. It's the nature of research. That's what makes it so fun.
Excellent. And then finally, just one last mm-hmm. question, and I'm thinking about asking all the people that we're going to interview through the CISL podcast. In your opinion, what does it mean to be informed?
What it means to be informed is to be given the right to come from an information behavior person. To be informed hopefully means to be given to have in your head the right information at the right time in the right format. That's a toughie.
Right. So yeah. I think it ties into understanding what's significant and what's relevant to stay informed. But
the trick is to get it at the right point in time for an intervention. When you have something going down in your life, and to be something that's usable. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, information is no good to have it when you don't need it. Because then you're dealing with information overload. No one got space in their heads to be walking around with that. You can't carry it around in the wrong format. That's not going to work either, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have it if you're not ready to deal with it. So that's what it means to be informed. Just to know it is not going to do you any good unless you need it.
Okay, well, I really want to thank you for your time. Hopefully you get a chance to enjoy the beautiful Mizzou campus.
Well, I don't know when this is going to be broadcast, but I do want to give a big thanks to everybody who invited me
mm-hmm.
and everyone who supported my visit. And I also understand that the school here, that you started your first ACES student chapter.
Yes, we did.
And I hope, I put a challenge out there for everybody to sign up. Because I got to tell you, out at the UW at the University of Washington, our student chapter has won Student Chapter of the Year Award. And I would sure like to see that honor go to all of you guys here at the University of Missouri. So to do that, I hope that everybody signs up.
Are you involved in the ACES chapter?
I'm heavily involved in ACES, not student chapter, because I don't qualify, because I'm not a student.
I mean, as like advisorly role.
I have been a big supporter of the student involvement at ACES in terms of setting up student awards for students to come. And I think it's one of the best things that students can do is get involved with ACES.
Any advice you could give us to give you folks out in Washington a run for your title?
Sign up.
Okay.
Sign up. And here's what you want to do is you want to have, as I was saying last night at dinner with a couple of your colleagues, you want to have a flash mob. Flash mob sign up.
Okay.
Flash mob sign up. So give everybody 24 or 48 hours to show your love for the new student chapter. Sign up, and then tell those folks at ACES that's what you did, that on these 2 days in April, because you have to do it before everybody takes off for the summer, right? Because
mm-hmm.
once everybody takes off, you take off. So, use technology, get everybody to sign up, and, you know, for the incentive, you know, Sandra suggested a laptop, maybe you're going to do, you know, some subsidize the trips to go to the conference. The conference is going to be a blast because it's going to be in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 75th anniversary of ACES. There's going to be all kinds of people coming to the conference. And Baltimore is so cool. When you get to know, it's the city of Edgar Allan Poe, you know, the crab cakes, Maryland, all those type of things. So it's a really, really good time to go. But I think that would be just fantastic to do a flash mob sign up. Get like 90% of the student body to sign up. If I understand, it's free. To sign up for the student chapter is free, so it doesn't get sweeter than that anyway.
All right. Well, thank you for that great plug. We're going to try and recruit more people that way.
Good.
And hopefully you get a chance to just see part of the campus besides offices and conference rooms.
Well, I'll put in another plug, too. Whoever signs up and comes to the conference in Maryland, I'll take you all out for drinks.
Wow. Okay. You heard that here.
You got it. Sandra and I will take everybody out for drinks, whoever comes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye.